Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. A new housing development in East Boston officially opened with a ribbon-cutting ceremony today. The Clippership Wharf is built to withstand sea level rise in Boston with what is called climate-resilient design. Here with more on this is Radio Boston producer Zoe Mitchell. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Tiziana.
All right, so this project was preparing for sea level rise in Boston. So let's start there. We hear sea level a lot. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so according to one scientific projection, sea level could rise 19 inches by the year 2050 in Boston. That's over a foot and a half. There are scientists who think it could be even higher. Climate Ready Boston is preparing for storm events with as much as 40 inches higher water. And just to recap, sea level is rising with the temperature for two reasons. One, warmer temperature makes seawater expand. And as the planet warms, two, ice sheets and glaciers melt into the ocean.
Now, Zoe, you became interested in exploring sea level rise after a segment you produced last year with nonfiction writer Elizabeth Rush. It was about her book, Rising.
Exactly. She went to communities in the U.S. to look at how they are affected by sea level rise and what they're doing about it. One point she made was that she believes eventually we will need to retreat from the shorelines. Here's what she told us.
Yes, we need to think about innovative infrastructure solutions, but ultimately they're going to buy us time. And the lowest lying places, the places that, you know, have long flooded, those are places that I think we are going to have to consider giving up.
Rush cites Fenway Park and Newbury Street, which were built on landfill and tidal marsh, as places from which we might have to retreat. And she's not the only one. Here's presidential candidate Andrew Yang at a Democratic debate.
We are too late. We are 10 years too late. We need to do everything we can to start moving the climate in the right direction, but we also need to start moving our people to higher ground.
Tiziana, that's pretty alarming.
Yeah.
Thinking about abandoning parts of the city. And Boston is flourishing right now. It doesn't even really feel like a possibility.
Especially in a city that's really undergoing massive development and, you know, especially in areas right up against the water. The seaport has changed rapidly in the last 10 years. And now we're seeing these development projects in East Boston as well.
Yeah. And in East Boston, one of those developments is Clippership Wharf. It's a luxury and mixed-use condominium building. And they redeveloped a piece of the harborside with outdoor space, restaurant space, a kayak center for everybody. And I was interested because the developing company, Lendlease, said early on that they're building Clippership to be climate resilient. Here's General Manager of Development Nick Islin.
And our aspiration was always to be a 100-year project. And I can't tell you what that means because I don't know what's going to happen in the next few decades relative to sea level. But we've created a scenario that kind of outpaces even the most aggressive, you know, sea level rise projections through 2070.
All right. That is a big projection. So what exactly does that even look like? What do you change about your design?
Yeah, so I'd like to take you back in time to when the project was still under construction. I visited East Boston and took a tour of Clippership Wharf with Islin. We duck around men in hard hats as we walk around the over 30,000 square foot complex at Clippership Wharf.
So this is the parking garage?
This is the parking garage. We're standing at a level that sits about 3 feet below the surrounding roadways.
We begin underground in a 300-car garage, but Islin says he uses the term underground loosely.
At high tide, the water table, the level of water, is, you know, a couple feet below where we're standing right now.
The entire property at Clippership has a raised ground plane. That means it has been built high enough to create a 14-foot buffer from high tides. So they built to keep the water out. But Islin says they're prepared if the water gets in.
So the garage, you know, it looks innocent enough, but we have very sophisticated underslab drainage systems and pumping in the case of flooding.
So could you pump water out? Is that what you're saying?
We can pump water out, yes.
So I think what's interesting about this site is that you guys basically are anticipating flooding, that it will happen.
Yeah, and really the trick with the garage is to keep the water out in the first place. It's only in a more catastrophic event that we think we're going to have to worry about pumping out of the garage. This will be a continuation of the harbor walk where it joins with the neighboring property. We haven't finished this section of the living shoreline yet. This will be planted with salt marsh.
Islin is pointing to what he calls the most unique thing about clippership. It's living shoreline.
We didn't want our site to be precious, right? So we really wanted to take native plant species and saltwater resistant species and make this a fairly rugged line of defense from the ocean.
Up against the shoreline is a series of rocky terraces planted with eelgrass, seaweed, woody shrubs that will be the first line of defense against rising tides.
The kind of rugged nature of the shoreline and the building up of the terraces and the granite blocks, which actually catch the waves and dissipate them before they get to, our property.
Lendlease is building for an uncertain future. In some areas, they've, quote, invited water into the site, while at the same time, they have retractable flood planks to wall off the ground floor.
We thought it was much better to keep the water out than let the water in at the end of the day. And so we engineered a solution to do that.
Zoe, I want to go back to an idea that you laid out at the beginning, which is that some people say we actually have to retreat from the waterfront. But Islin, he seems optimistic and even confident that this complex will be standing for 100 years. How can he be that confident?
I was also wondering about that. I'm kind of a pessimist. And I asked Islin what he would say to people, like Rush or like Yang, who might say that Lendlease is foolish to build here in the first place.
Creating an environment that acknowledges it and pays deference to it, but also allows you to live with it seamlessly, I think was the goal here. Retreating from the water would have meant that we wouldn't have been able to capture the value of all of these residences we're putting here, and means we would have been able to improve, our site a lot less. And so the power of the economic engine of the residential real estate is really what delivers experiences like this.
Do you have to relay to people that, you are taking a risk of this flooding? This water will be a part of your experience living here. How much do you think that kind of messaging is important to people who are interested in a property like this? Are they taking a risk?
Well, I don't think they're taking a risk. And if they think they're taking a risk, they will ask. And I will tell you that we have answers. If we have to be insular in a storm event, and storm events don't usually last very long. These are 4 to 8 hour, mm-hmm. Events as tides and storm surge takes effect. We can be an island, don't want to be, but a lot of people saw from last January's storm a photo of a kayaker along Lewis Street, and so the water came up to the, almost the tops of the fire hydrants. And that was a great test case for our site because we got to see, what happens in a 100-year storm and how our project behaves.
Zoe, what do climate experts think? Are these the types of features that'll make a difference?
Yeah, so I spoke with a few people at UMass Boston who do a lot of work in this area. Rebecca Hurst is the director at the school's Sustainable Solutions Lab, and she said the development is commendable and that she was excited about things like the living shoreline. Overall, Hurst says she thinks it can be a model for other developers about what's possible.
I think that the value that a development like Clippership provides is that they showed what's possible within the current regulatory framework that we have. And I think that it's important for us to understand if someone is really committed and really thinking about ways to be creative about climate resilience, what can be done right now.
Paul Kirshen, a professor of climate adaptation, also called Clippership a positive step forward, but he did have questions about things like the living shoreline and how big of a difference they will actually make.
Lendlease thought about putting this living shoreline in before there wasn't much known about how living shorelines are really going to perform under present and future climates. And we still don't know much about how really well nature-based infrastructure is going to perform under present and future climates.
I also talked with both of them about the fact that this is primarily a luxury development. The first unit sold for a range between $400,000 to $1.5 million.
Yeah, there is a real tension in East Boston about units, including Clippership, that threaten to gentrify the community and pushing people out who live there. So how about people who get pushed out or are running that risk? How will they benefit from any of this?
Yeah, this is a serious issue. We are in the middle of a housing affordability crisis in Boston. And Radio Boston did a series on evictions in East Boston. Our WBR colleague Simone Rios has also reported specifically on the tensions in the community about developments like Clippership. We'll have links to both of those at radioboston.org. But to get to your question, there are some benefits for lower-income residents. As part of city requirements, Lendlease redeveloped Boston Housing Authority's Heritage Complex. The ribbon-cutting ceremony today celebrated the opening of 22 affordable units and 30 mixed-income condos. These units don't have any specific climate-resilient features, but Lendlease says everyone will benefit from the living shoreline and the flood protection barriers, things that keep the water out. So Rebecca Hurst at UMass kind of says there's more that we should be doing.
Given the housing crisis that we have right now and given how vulnerable so much of the city is, we really need to have systemic change, right? We really need to be thinking on a broad scale. You know, we're not actually going to be prepared if we just have a number of different new developments that are islands of resilience and then the rest of the city is vulnerable.
Zoe, you mentioned at the beginning the Climate Ready Boston plan. What's been done on this?
Climate Ready Boston lays out the city's projections of how Boston will be impacted by climate change. It also lays out some actions around creating a coastal protection system, resilient infrastructure, and local climate resiliency plans. Some parts of the plans are still, quote, in development or, quote, in progress. And, you know, understandably so, this is a big project. Here's how UMass Boston's Paul Kirshen put it.
I think it's great that the, the mayor's Office of Environment has put together this sketch and have this vision. And now the challenge is filling it in with solutions that have been tested and we know will work.
Kirshen also pointed out that this isn't just Boston's problem. You know, we need state and regional coordination on this as well.
That is Radio Boston producer Zoe Mitchell. Thanks, Zoe.
Thank you so much.
We want to take a moment to remember Cokie Roberts, who died today at age 75. A pioneering woman journalist, she joined NPR in 1978, when that was still something new, and became one of the handful of women who helped shape public radio. In addition to being an iconic NPR voice, Roberts was a best-selling author of 6 books and winner of an Emmy Award, as well as the Murrow and Cronkite Awards for her journalism. Along the way, she inspired a lot of people, especially women journalists who have been tweeting today. Morning Edition co-host Rachel Martin, we are heartbroken. When I was in high school, I wanted to grow up to be Cokie Roberts. NPR journalist Renee Montaigne, she was vibrant and generous and believed in good. Maria Shriver, she worked to give other women a seat at the table. I'm going to pull up a chair today and think of her. Roberts also inspired me. She was brilliant. She fearlessly broke ground in a man's world, but most of all, she made the complicated messiness of our political world understandable. We spoke with Cokie Roberts a few years ago on Radio Boston about her book, Founding Mothers, Remembering the Ladies. We'll have a link to that conversation at radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, Michael Shore, creator of NBC's The Good Place. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.